This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And as promised, Power Listener, we're getting into our market conversation today, and we are joined by Jimmy Moyaha, who's an independent analyst, of course. I always have fun with Jimmy when we make sense around everything that's going on in the marketplace. Jimmy, how are you, sir?
Good evening, Mr. Skenjana. Good evening to our listeners. I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. Are you at the Delicious Festival tomorrow?
No, you didn't give me tickets.
Hey, Jimmy.
No, I mean, if you look at how the markets are doing, I think I definitely need to be at the Delicious
economy
Festival.
Clay economy, Cyril, Jimmy. Hey, Tato Cyril, we are better. Nadi. We're bottom feeders. We're bottom feeders for this edition of the festival. How are you, sir?
I can't complain. Unlike the markets, on the other hand, I think we're all having a better day than the markets at the moment. Everything looks like it's one of those days. It's going to be one of those days. Again, I'm only reporting what I'm seeing. But it's a saucy one.
Yeah, day two, because I took a beating yesterday, and the extent of the beating to today, any sectorial particular areas of interest that are coming through?
Well, I mean, for one, I can tell you we're down about 3% for the day on the top 40. That's going to close out the week quite bearishly as well. There, we're down on currencies. It looks like it's just an overall expectation around just the markets in general. And I think there's a couple of news announcements and a couple of sort of reactions from the market's perspective to what's happened over the last 2 or 3 days, from the US rate hike to our rate hike to the surprise announcement today from the UK around the stimulus package. So we're seeing a widespread reaction to a lot that's been happening. But we'll dig into that in a bit.
Sure. And certainly, I think lots of macro developments at this point in time that are really, I think, doing taking a bit of a number on our markets for sure. Just getting into some of the local stocks. Finally, Massmart, we're there.
Yeah, Massmart, we know that they announced earlier in the month that they are looking to acquire the remaining stake that they, Walmart is looking to acquire the remaining stake in Massmart, rather. They've been 50% owners plus since about 2011. I mean, they started out with 51%. They wanted to acquire the remaining 47% around the 8th of September. They made that announcement, which was at about a 53% premium back then. So it was going to be about $370 million in terms of transaction value. They've just issued the statement or issued a circular outlining sort of guidelines and steps in terms of what the next processes are from here if everything goes through. We expect that there's an AGM or a general meeting that'll be around the 21st of October. They're looking to have everything sorted and delisted by the 8th of November, but they've just outlined timelines in terms of if things are approved without conditions, when times will be scheduled and that sort of thing. But it looks like that's going ahead, which is surprising given Massmart's recent performance, given their growth trajectories. There was a study done that sort of outlines the profitability score ratios or the chances that the company will achieve its growth targets, and Massmart didn't score too highly on that. Walmart's still looking to acquire them regardless of that and looking to obviously delist the business, as they've mentioned previously. We'll have to see if everything goes through without any questions or competitions. More than likely it will. They're already a majority shareholder there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me would sound like that's more intuitive, right? Because at least you're delisting at a discounted value. Two, when you're then looking at the kind of broader context around whether or not the prospects of meeting, I guess, the minimum hurdles at this point in time, you also think about the shareholder pressure that then does come, and that also could create a bit of a spiral. I mean, if you look at the likes of PPC Cement, something very similar happened where they initially started a couple of rights issues. Eventually, they just couldn't meet the hurdles. And I mean, that share went from 32 Rand a share in 2010, 2011 to 2 Rand a share at some point. And that is because also of their inability to meet the minimum hurdles from a shareholder expectation point of view.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look at what Walmart has been doing strategically with Massmart over the last period of time, they started out by closing out some of the Dion stores, closing out that the Dion name. They started to then rebrand and see if they could diversify what they're offering through the Game brand. They're now closing down some Game stores. So they have pretty much been slowly but surely over the last couple of years just repositioning the business, I guess, maybe to be more in line with their international businesses and what they've got in America as a product offering. What remains to be seen will be whether or not they then bring the Walmart setup or the Walmart name into South Africa with what's left. I mean, we know they've got the Builders brand left. They've got the Macro brand left as well there. So we'll have to see after this has taken place and after the delisting has taken place how they then restructure the business further if they plan to.
And I mean, it reminds me against that the Starbucks backdrop, that Burger King backdrop, where and I mean, even Tammy Taylor leave that VC at UCT. But again, just some of those things. Some when these big brands come in, they try to first do a scaled model, and then when they, I guess, they struggle there, and they kind of do a, kind of a partially franchise still, because they still feel like there's opportunity on the continent, but they're just not able to realize value at scale.
Absolutely. So they all want to dabble into this into the markets. They want to expand into new territories. And I think for them, especially with international companies, finding the right optimal mix is where they often struggle. I mean, it's understanding that your African market is not going to be the same as your United States market. Your developed economy market is not going to be the same as an emerging market type of setup. And so you need to adjust and adapt your product offering or your go-to-market strategy. And I think some of the companies over the last couple of years have struggled with that. I mean, we know Grand Parade was looking to do that, as you mentioned, with the Burger King and the Dunkin' Donuts and the Baskin Robbins. And we know that it didn't work out for the Baskin Robbins and Dunkin' Donuts side of it. Mm. So we'll have to see how Walmart then adapts to this, how Walmart is then able to adjust if they want to be a contending player within the space on a permanent basis.
If you want to be a contending player in the South African market, vele uyifake kancinci. Moving on, of course, to Remgro. What's happening there?
Malume Yohan is at it again. he's looking to get rid of his 25% stake in Total Energies. As of 2021 financials, I think it had a book value of about $2.5 billion. Now, this is obviously, I mean, if you just look at the pattern of what's happened recently with Remgro, they got rid of that 30% stake in Distell to Heineken. They acquired the remainder of the MediClinic with that partnership that they went into there. And they recently sold off that Grindrod bank stake that they held, which, interestingly enough, Competition Commission granted the approval for that merger with African Bank. I think it was a 1.5 billion rand merger. So that's been approved now, and that'll be, I don't know if Remgro will regret having sold their stake prior to that, but it looks very much like the Remgro family and the Remgro stable are readjusting and repositioning the Remgro brand and repositioning their investment interests. In some cases, they might be cashing out of certain investments that they've been in for quite some time. In other cases, it might look like it might start to look like a bit of a disinvestment out of South Africa, but I mean, Remgro still holds companies like RCL Foods within its stable, which are huge players in the South African landscape. So I think it might be too soon to tell, but it's definitely repositioning season for Remgro with the disposals and acquisitions that they've been going through.
I think, I mean, that conglomerate model for listed assets is complex, right? Because you've got two layers of accountability, and then you've got an embedded discount that also comes through because because you've got to take your management fees as well. And I mean, we saw it with ARC as well. I mean, the most ludicrous thing we've never ever imagined that would happen in our market, where an organization or a group would do a rights interest just to pay themselves a management fee.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the owners of ARC and the owners of Remgro are also co-owners of the Blue Bulls, so I'm sure these conversations are mutual conversations that take place more than once.
Oh, Blue Buller. And now we're understanding that the big challenge that we're finding in our market discount is actually the Blue Buller at this point in time. And then Comcom as well, Caxton Impact.
Yeah, Caxton won their appeal with the competition tribunal. I had a chat with the CEO or the executive, Tim Holden, last week when they released results. So they published results around the 9th, but we couldn't really delve into the impacts conversation. And that was largely because there was a gagging order pretty much that Impact had requested where Caxton was not allowed to discuss these things. And they took on that order on appeal. They were basically not allowed to discuss anything around Impact and what their plan. It's been a very tense situation with Impact, if I'm honest. It's been very awkward as well. You look at the golden era aspect of it. They're a 10% holder in Impact, but they're also the major customer, but they're also the leading competitor for Impact, yet they're also co-accused in the cartel case of colluding with Impact. And then now Caxton is here saying, we want to buy the rest of... They're already, a 34% shareholder, and they're saying, we want to increase our stake, and Impact is saying, no, well, you haven't given us an amount. So it's just been a very awkward time in that situation. And effectively, Caxton has wanted to go the route of a hostile merger, a hostile takeover, because they've gone the first option to say, hey, Impact, let's sit down, let's make a joint announcement and sort of a joint merger conversation. And Impact has said, no, well, you haven't given us an amount, so therefore we say no, but we also have been doing other things on the side with Golden Era that we're not going to confirm or deny. It's just been very tense there, Shane, man.
It's such an interesting one because, I think the last 15 years in the market's actually been incredibly boring. In terms of just really like strong developments in terms of hostile takeovers and all of those things where you're really seeing kind of corporate action in what we used to then talk about corporate action then, right? And it just seems like now everyone wants to kind of, get hunky-dory and kumbaya about all these things. And half these deals anyway don't actually create any meaningful value for shareholders in any case. So maybe it's time for the return of the hostile takeover.
Yeah, well, if you look at the last couple of years as well, we've seen from the 2008 financial crisis to now, we've seen sort of unprecedented levels of interest rates or inflation levels staying low. It's been a very calm type of situation. Yeah. So you're very right. This is very much a let's shake up the cheese a bit. Let's see who's where and that sort of thing. And you can't help but wonder, this has been brought on a lot by or exacerbated by the pandemic. And coming out of the pandemic, valuations are just not what they used to be. Intrinsic values are being looked at and questioned. You're seeing that we saw companies reaching $1 trillion status. We see companies, Apple is now one of the most shorted stocks in America. You're seeing just a whole readjustment and a whole shift of how we look at companies, how we look at valuations, how we look at mergers and acquisitions.
Absolutely.
And people are coming in, like people are going back to the Wild West.
When we look at kind of technical analysis, it's gone out the window. Fundamental analysis, it's gone out the window. That's why no one's heard anything about Warren Buffett in a while, because fundamentalism is not the order of the day when some of the biggest stocks in the world now are, I guess, growth stocks at best. Because, I don't even know if I can call Meta, Twitter, etc., even growth stocks at this point in time.
It's survival of the fittest. It's the Wild West. And if what buys an A, you'll find yourself on the short end of it. It really is.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, you look at it, and it's not just the stock, the equity markets, right? Yeah. It's the central banks as well. Mm. Whoever thought that you'd see Switzerland hiking rates on this in the same week that the Bank of Japan doesn't hike rates? The UK announces £160 billion stimulus over 6 years. South Africa's interest rates are back pre-pandemic, yet our core inflation is down. It's all over the place.
Turkey's dropping interest rates at inflation levels of 80%. What a time to be alive.
What a time.
And our ministers are dealing with transport issues all the way from Dubai. So really, I think we really have a lot going on, both in the global market and in the local one. And then moving on, Dinel.
Oh, you see, now we're going to SOEs. This is a whole other conversation. Danel's got a 5 billion rand restructure plan that they've got in place, right? They're saying that they might fall short of about 3 billion rand, which is 60% of the 5 billion that they need, right? They're saying that they plan to raise 2 billion rand internally. Now, as an SOE, my question is, what does internally mean? This is just another fancy way of saying we're expecting another bailout from whether it's the midterm budget policy statement, the budget next year, or whatever. I mean, they've previously failed at a restructuring plan. They've now brought in a former CEO to head up this restructuring plan. We know that earlier in the year, of course, their bonds were suspended because they failed to submit their financials on time in line with JSE requirements, right? Mm. They've had to use R1 billion in the past of medical benefits or from a medical benefits trust to pay for salaries because they couldn't pay for salaries. Denel has been technically insolvent since 2019. Now, we say technically insolvent because it simply means that their assets exceed their liabilities exceed, yes, in terms of their book. But technically insolvent just simply means that they have a backer or a financier that will allow them to meet their actual requirements so that they don't become actually insolvent.
So
effectively, if we're going to look at this from a business perspective, these guys are insolvent, right? You can dress it up however you want and that sort of thing. But if they don't get another bailout, which they're relying on because they're using terms like technically insolvent and raising $2 billion internally, they're anticipating that the government is going to give them another bailout. Now, whether our fiscus can support that or not is a whole other conversation you and I will have another day, right? But now, in terms of the restructuring plan, how is this restructuring plan going to be any different from the one that they've previously tried and previously failed at? Those are the questions that need to be asked.
And I mean, just yesterday we were talking about senior lenders at Sal C taking a massive haircut, 20 cents to the rand. And I mean, and we're sitting now and you're like, actually, when you're looking around, you're like, I think I'm the senior lender to Denel as the South African. And I think we're going to take a proper haircut there as well. So yeah, it's going to be another one because I think, you know, for me, AXA is the only SOE that deserves any sympathy in this particular context because, you know, for 20 of the last 22 years, they were profitable. And actually maybe it's for 20 or last 23 years they were profitable. And you know, they did what they needed to do to fulfill against their mandate. But yeah, the other guys, all of them, naughty corner.
You know what? I think I will move one other SOE to the APSA side of it, right? And that's Telkom. And that's because they've managed to perfect or get right that public-private partnership.
Nigeria.
That's a point I'll take, but it's been a fair turnaround strategy relative to the other SOEs, right?
What a write-off.
But if we're comparing things on a scale, right, and we're ranking our SOEs from bad to worse, there isn't much of a scale. It's a very skewed scale. It's very, very one-sided, and I think we do need to throw some balance on the other side. But yes, no, you can't ignore what happened in Nigeria. It is a significant impact on the business, and I mean, we know that this will more than likely affect what happens with the proposed MTN takeover and that sort of thing. I mean, we know MTN's has been doing very well in Nigeria.
Do you know what makes me upset about the Telkom Nigeria multi-links deal? Is because the technology itself was actually ahead of its time. You know, it was one step ahead of GSM technology, and there's nothing else we could have done at that point in time around that. And so certainly, you know, for me, you've invested in really, really solid technology ahead of its time. You just couldn't actually build a business model that actually can carry that into then the season it's supposed to. I mean, that was pre-3G, man.
Yeah, you know what? And that would have been a game changer, not just for the continent, but for the world in general. I mean, if you look at where we were back when we were looking at GSM days and we were looking at, no one anticipated we'd be at 3G, no one anticipated we'd be at 5G today. Mm. So back then, you're very right, it was something that would have changed the course of telecommunications, not only for the continent, not only for South African business, but for the globe. Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm. I mean, because GSM is still relevant even today in terms of the amount of telecommunications data they collect and the amount of rich industry insights that they do drive and infrastructure investments that are drive both continentally as well continued into some of the global peripheries. And I'm sitting there and I'm just like, Telkom, you were there, bruh.
You were leading. You weren't there. You were in front. You were the ones that people would have been looking to. And imagine if you had gotten that right and then brought along a partnership with a tech giant like something out of China. you look at a Tencent that's been in heavily in gaming, you look at an Alibaba that's been heavily in e-commerce, and imagine if you're looking at you being the infrastructure leader on the side of the continent and in the world that then positions global networking and someone dropped the ball, eh?
They would have been the Alibaba of telecoms.
Someone dropped the ball.
Dropped the ball, and it was a medicine ball. It landed very painfully on the South African feet. Yeah, Jimmy, thank you very much. As always, we always appreciate, of course, the lovely reflections that we get around what's happening and what's not happening in our market at this point in time. Have a lovely weekend, sir.
Same to you.
Our listener, that was Jimmy Moya, who is an independent analyst, of course, giving us our market wrap.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.